Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Well, first this morning, as no doubt you've been hearing, uncertainty reigns in the Middle East as Israel ordered an attack on Iran after what it says was a violation of the ceasefire announced by Donald Trump just a few hours before. Now, the Reuters news agency reported Israel's Defense Minister Israel Katz as saying, "I instructed the military to respond forcefully to Iran's violation of the ceasefire with high-intensity strikes against targets in the heart of Tehran." Let's get the latest on this. I'm joined by Sikander Kermani, who's Foreign Affairs correspondent with Channel 4 News. And Sikander is in Israel this morning. Good morning to you, Sikander, and thank you for being with us.
Good morning.
So as our news bulletin just reported there, Iranian state TV now has denied that Iran broke the ceasefire, as Israel claims it has this morning. What do you know about what's going on?
Yeah, that's right, Claire. I mean, look, ceasefires can often be shaky and fragile in their initial few hours, and that certainly seems to be the case right now. Right up until the ceasefire came into place at around 7 a.m. local time, I should stress there was some confusion amongst many people about when exactly that ceasefire was coming into place. But right up until that moment, we saw some barrages of missiles fired by the Iranians towards Israel. Four people killed in a residential building that was struck in the southern city of Beersheba. Prior to that, very heavy bombing by the Israelis of Iran overnight. But it was subsequent to that 7 a.m. ceasefire deal that Israel said two missiles were launched by the Iranians towards the northern city of Haifa. Both were intercepted, they said. Following that, the Israelis have said that they're planning on carrying out large-scale retaliatory attacks in Tehran, but so far we haven't actually seen those take place yet. So perhaps because Iran has rode back and denied launching these attacks, maybe Israel too will act with restraint and will not carry out any kind of strikes in Iran. It's a fluid and kind of worrying situation for all here. Mm.
But what you suspect is happening now, perhaps, is that everybody is taking a breath just to assess what exactly has happened.
It seems like it could be the case because, you know, certainly when we had the attack last night by the Iranians on that American base in Qatar, it was very clearly done as a carefully calculated, choreographed move, I think, designed to allow a kind of off-ramp. President Trump clearly saw it in that way as well. And you know, it seems that the Israelis have also been looking now for some kind of exit strategy to their war with Iran as well. So I think it's in all sides' interest to try and draw a line underneath this chapter to try and return to some form of negotiations around Iran's nuclear program. But of course, you know, in such a tense and febrile atmosphere, it's very easy for miscommunications, for miscalculations, and for those to provoke escalatory responses from the other side.
Now, prior to this confusion over what's been happening in the last little while, the analysis in general was suggesting that this was quite an extraordinary result for Donald Trump to be able to broker this deal between Iran and Israel.
Yes, I mean, I think, you know, there was a lot of concern leading up to President Trump's strikes on Iran and the nuclear sites there that the US bombers carried out over the weekend, that his attack could lead to, you know, perhaps even, you know, people were using phrases like World War III or a third Gulf War, a wider regional war. Instead, what we saw was actually Iran launch, yes, a retaliatory attack, but one that was clearly designed to be largely performative, largely symbolic. The Iranians even stressing that they used the same number of missiles as America used bombs. But whereas America, we believe, at the very least, was severe damage to those nuclear facilities in Iran, the strike on the American base yesterday in Qatar caused no casualties. It had already been evacuated. The Qataris were informed in advance. They would, of course, informed the Americans about the strike as well. So, you know, there was a very clear decision by the Iranians not to try and further escalate a direct confrontation with the Americans. And I think once that had been, once that retaliatory attack was out of the way, it paved the way for some kind of ceasefire agreement to take place between Israel and Iran. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, there's going to be big challenges going forward, because the reason that Israel says it went to war is because negotiations over Iran's nuclear program were going nowhere. America had demanded Iran completely give up its uranium enrichment program. Iran had been resisting that. So, you know, even if the two sides go back to negotiations, it's not clear what kind of resolution there could now be. And there's still quite a degree of confusion as to exactly what extent Iran's nuclear capabilities have been degraded. Certainly they've been damaged, but are they completely extinguished? Because, you know, many analysts have said perhaps one of the things the Iranian regime may take away from this whole episode is actually that they're going to double down on their efforts, perhaps in secret, to build a nuclear weapon, because that's the only thing that would ensure their survival.
And there was talk as well that some of their arsenal had been moved, you know, to a secret location and may still exist elsewhere.
Indeed. Indeed. 400 kilograms of, you know, highly enriched uranium.
Yeah.
Not quite weapons grade, but that was said to have already been moved away from the sites that were struck over the weekend. And it's not clear where they are or whether there's enough capability within Iran's other nuclear facilities still for that to be further enriched into weapons grade.
And I wonder, Sikander, what you're hearing about how solid the foundation is for this ceasefire, because Donald Trump announced it. Then shortly after that, Iran agreed that this deal had been done. But it took a long time then this morning. It was a number of hours before Israel came out and confirmed that the deal had been done. I don't know whether that's because they needed to have their cabinet meeting and square it away in that regard, or is there some doubt as to whether it is a solid ceasefire that will be a lasting one?
Well, I mean, President Trump announced the ceasefire in a very convoluted, I have to say, message that kind of gave various time frames of 6, 12 and 24 hours that frankly, you know, made very little sense to myself. I challenge anyone to take much sense away from it. But in reality, it seems as if the ceasefire came into place around 7 a.m. local time here in Israel. The Iranian foreign minister had put out a tweet saying that if Israel stops its attacks by 4 a.m. local time, then we will also stop our attacks. It seems like the Israelis had, but subsequent to that, the Iranians did continue attacks up to 7 a.m. So I think there's perhaps a degree of confusion, a degree of maneuvering, a degree of testing the boundaries by different sides right now. But I would expect that all sides are heading towards de-escalation right now.
Sikander, thank you very much for joining us from Israel. That's Sikander Kamani, who's foreign affairs correspondent with Channel 4 News. Well, I'm joined now by former commander of the US forces in Europe, retired Lieutenant General Ben Hodge. Good morning to you.
Hey, good morning, Claire.
What's your reaction to all of this, everything that's happened overnight and is ongoing this morning?
Well, I hope it's true, like everybody, that there really will be a ceasefire that holds and lasts for a long time. But I'm skeptical, first of all, that for it to happen so quickly is hard to believe, to be honest. And the president, my president, the way he speaks, and he's frequently premature on making big giant announcements. He wants to have the headline, and these Truth Socials he's posting are they don't sound like they're the result of all kinds of intense negotiations where everybody comes to a real agreement. And we still don't know. It's way too early to have full battle damage assessment from the strikes the U.S. did over the weekend. So we don't know what's out there. There are several hundred kilograms of uranium nuclear material that are still not accounted for. So I don't know how we can be confident that there really is a ceasefire that mm-hmm. both sides will respect.
Do you think it's too good to be true that the Americans could go in quickly over the weekend, get back out again, you'd have some sort of coordinated response from Iran, and then it's happy day, ceasefire, everyone walks away?
Yeah, I think you've described it quite well. I think this is the president trying to rapidly transition from, you know, the wartime president to the peacemaker. He's got his own domestic audience to worry about. And frankly, I think the only audiences that really matter to him are his own domestic political base and then any potential Nobel Prize voters. That's what is in the front of his mind, and that's who he's talking to when he makes these really grand declarations of, you know, peace in our time. And we're not I hope it's true. I hope I'm wrong. And it's just hard to believe.
Well, if it is true, it is quite the coup for him, isn't it?
Yeah, well, if it is true, you're exactly right. I mean, he will deserve a lot of credit for doing something such a bold thing and being clever enough to on his timing to allow the Israelis to have done all the dirty work, as German Chancellor Merz said, and then the Americans are able to come in, punch some holes in the nuclear sites, and that's it. I hate to sound like a skeptic, but it's hard to believe, and so much has been announced when there's no way that the Israelis or the United States could have gotten full BDA, battle damage assessment, on the results of those strikes. So I guess that's why I think that some of this is premature.
And do you understand why Israel would have pulled back at this point in time? You know, as you say, that they don't know whether the job that they saw needed to be done has been completed or not. So why agree to a ceasefire now?
Well, there's probably two or three reasons. Number one, I have seen reports, as you have, that most of the targets on the Israeli Defense Force target list have, in fact, been eliminated. I mean, you'll never know if you got 100%, but I mean, I think they feel pretty good about what they have accomplished. So it could be that, okay, we'll wait. And of course, they will always reserve the right to resume strikes should they see more targets. They've done that in the past. Secondly, they may be running low on some of their critical munitions, whether it's for attack or for defense. So maybe for the Israelis, this is a convenient time to catch their breath and to do some replenishment of their own. I don't know that, of course, and they would not advertise that.
Well, as Secunda was telling us a little earlier, Iran may see what has happened now, look at what they have left in terms of their enriched capability, nuclear capability, head off and develop that as quickly and as secretly as they possibly can.
No, I think that's got to be one of the considerations on the Israeli side. And the Americans, U.S. intelligence, I imagine, is working very hard to try and find, you know, what's still out there. And again, this is why I think the president is wrong to so prematurely declare, you know, everybody's agreed to a complete, full, last forever ceasefire, no matter how badly we all would like to see that happen. I think it's premature, and we should be skeptical.
Ben, always good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us this morning. That is Ben Hodges there, who's a retired US Army lieutenant general. Well, Iran launched multiple missiles against an American military base in Qatar yesterday in retaliation for the US strike on its nuclear facilities over the weekend. Thankfully, there were no casualties reported. And I'm joined now by Anthony Kearney, who's an advanced nurse practitioner at Sidra Medicine, which is a women and children's hospital in Doha. Hello, Anthony.
Hi, Claire. How are you?
Good, and good to talk to you. I understand you had a fairly frightening experience yesterday.
Yeah, unprecedented here in Qatar. We're here 6 years now. We've never had a whiff of anything like this, so it was a bit of a shock to us. I suppose growing up in Ireland, we weren't exposed to anything like this. So, yeah, it gave us a bit of a fright last night. Mm.
And where were you when you realised that something was happening?
Well, I was working up until 6 p.m. So I left work 6 p.m. I got home, but the ministry had been telling us all day that everything was stable. There was no concerns. A few of my colleagues at 2 o'clock yesterday had got word from their American embassy, because they were American citizens, that just to go for shelter for safety reasons. And then we didn't pay much attention to that, because through the official channels we hadn't heard anything. So I just worked as normal. I came home, and then my wife said that our middle child was away at a friend's house, and then through unofficial channels and WhatsApp groups, our daughter had messages, a message that she had got that said there was an imminent threat and that the airspace was closed. So we all jumped in the car together. We raced over there to pick her up. And just before we arrived, there, our youngest in the back said, "What are the planes doing in the sky?" Man. So then we heard just maybe four or five big thuds, like explosions. We didn't know if they'd hit the ground, if the, what was going on at that stage. We were in the car. We were, I guess...
you were on the road and you were hearing these noises.
Yeah, and we could just see that. Then we could see the missiles coming across the car.
My
I opened
God.
Up the sunroof to have a look. And you could see them being intercepted by the other missiles. So, but it seemed like an eternity, but I think maybe 5-10 minutes is all it was. And then there was panic on the roads because the roads were full, the malls were full, everything was open, business as usual.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think to any official channels that we as residents or citizens had got any notification of an imminent threat, even though the British Embassy and American embassies had alerted their citizens. So
yeah.
There was a bit of confusion and a kind of panic at the time. The roads got a bit panicked then, but we got home and got out of the car. We felt safer once we were out of the car. We weren't as vulnerable or exposed. So people were just out in the streets looking into the skies. There was kids playing. People laughed and joked and thought it was... I don't think they realised the seriousness of it. But then in the aftermath, when you look back, it seems that we were quite protected. It was a bit of, I know they say it was a tame effort, but it didn't feel tame.
I'm sure it didn't. I mean, they say it was coordinated and it was sort of an organised response. But still, if you're sitting in your car with your family and you see missiles being intercepted over your head, you must think, what am I doing here?
Well, yeah, it went through my head, and then the airspace was shut. Everyone was scrambling. We're in lots of Irish community WhatsApp groups. We're talking airspace is shut. People are saying, how can we get out? How can we get flights? We're getting messages from the embassy, just generic messages. So there was a bit of panic there for a while. But then, you know, immediately after, and Trump was speaking about, a ceasefire just immediately after. It all seemed a little bit kind of strange. And then when you sit down and look back, it all looked a little bit staged. Like, you know, there was 4 or 5 hour warning. It was an empty base. All the stuff was moved away. It just didn't. It seems a bit strange for us.
But yes, it is uncomfortable. You know, as I say, if you're there with your family. And how many years did you say you're there, Anthony?
We're 6 in 29th of this month. We'll be 6 years here.
Right, but you never had anything like this happen to you in those years.
Yeah. Safest place I've ever been. I never felt any sort of a threat from any crime, any violence, nothing like that.
And
it's
do you
a very,
still
very
feel?
Peaceful state.
Do you still feel safe today after what happened yesterday?
I feel safer today than I did last night. Yeah, I suppose with the talk of the ceasefire and all that, but it's a little bit fragile at the moment. There's, you know, it's not solidified yet as a ceasefire, so. I suppose we'll have to, you know, talk over the next 24 hours and see what we need to do, for our family and that. So I feel a bit happier, a bit safer today, but obviously it's always in the back of your mind what happened last night, what happened again.
Were the children all right? I'm sure they were a bit shaken up like the adults as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they were upset. They were very upset. Our oldest was okay. He's old enough. He was a bit more pragmatic and he was calm. But the two girls were quite upset.
Yeah, understandably so. But listen, I'm glad to hear you're all well and safe today. And it's good to talk to you, Anthony.
And you too. Thanks for reaching out.
Look after yourself. Take care. Anthony Kearney there, advanced nurse practitioner at Sidra Medicine in Doha in Qatar. Right, that's an extraordinary story. And when you put yourself in that position, collecting your child from a play date and you see missiles being intercepted overhead as you're trying to make your way home. Now, later on, is it time for a specific driving test for tractors or for the drivers of tractors? We're going to be discussing the proposed changes to the rules. But before that, Irish consumers are saying that they're extremely concerned about the cost of food. We're going to look at how to keep the cost of the weekly shop down.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.